You are now listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart.
Sorry, the podcast is starting with me laughing. It's
always does.
Last week, we're coming from the land of the Long White Clod. It's New Zealand with episode sucks. We're coming to you live from the Soul Trader studio, but sorry to our New Zealand cousins.
it's episode six, a mass walkout.
I have a theory about New Zealanders that I will share with you now. Why? Because it's my podcast and I'll cry if I want to. That in New Zealand, when they're teaching the when they're teaching the
The vowels.
I had a mental blank, total mental blank. Yes, when they're teaching vowels, I know English. Me good. Me speak good. When they're teaching the vowels, they teach them that they're just interchangeable.
Right.
Just use any one of them. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
And if you analyze their language, because that's the thing. It's like fish and chips, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're both eyes, but it's fush.
And chops.
And chops. It's not, but they're not both U's. One's a U and one's an O.
Fush and chops.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fush and chops.
Hmm.
So they're interchangeable.
Well, we'll have to cover that. We'll have to cover that in another podcast.
Well, our New Zealand audience can tell us otherwise. Neil Finn, right. If you want to come on and explain, you know, your country in length, we can debate why Crowded House is an Australian band and not a New Zealand band.
That's terrible. While we're on that, you know, sort of lighthearted sort of bashing of our cousins from across,
I really want to
across
go there.
The way. I would love to go to New Zealand and play in some wonderful venues.
I'm just a Lord of the Rings fan. I'd just like to walk around the place and go, oh, look.
True. But
so
you know. I'd love to play there. Our friend Darren Zaza has been over to New Zealand and he says that the cappuccinos are the best in terms of the milk. You know, New Zealand milk is apparently really, really, really good because the cows eat better grass over there or something. But I remember, I'll just tell a very quick story and then we'll get on to what we're talking about New Zealanders here. I used to work for an internet florist and that was my interest in all things internet and computers was spawned from the fact that I was customer services manager for an internet florist, and we were dealing with one of our we were dealing with one of our clients over in New Zealand, and they had to repeat a Visa card number or something, and there was a few sixes in there. So anyway, I was on the phone to him, and I had it on speaker, and she was repeating this number, and I was trying not to laugh because her accent was really, really broad. And so I said to her, I'm sorry, I didn't quite get the last three numbers. Can you repeat that again? And I got all the other people to come over and I said, have a listen to this. And she was lovely though. And it was just the most broadest accent you could possibly imagine. And we sorted everything out. I said, well, thank you very much. Dealing with you has made my day. She goes, oh, that's lovely, you know, in her accent, you know, oh, and you've made mine as well. And so we hung up and then as soon as we hung up, I just lost it, you know, and that was really cruel, but that was way back in 2003 and I was a real prick back then. I wouldn't do it now, but back then, man, it's brutal.
Probably still make you laugh now.
Oh, you see New Zealand programs on telly, you know.
Well, there's
like crime dramas or something like that. And, you know, there's this real, sort of real intense scene, and you know, this guy comes in and oh, good as bro, you know, and all that. Oh, you can't. You, you can't take it seriously. But they then lean again, into I'm it. Sure people do it with our accent as well.
Yeah, but they lean into it. There's the deck ad. The guy's talking about his deck on his house.
Oh, the deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just like people love it on my deck.
Yeah.
And it's
they
just
play
like
up on it too.
You know. And yeah, so like, you know, you got to lean into it. You know?
The best thing about New Zealanders though is that they do have a pretty amazing sense of humour, and they do know how to laugh at themselves, and they are, in general, you know, good natured people and can take a ribbing. It's us Aussies that can't take a good ribbing from them,
right?
Because they can get pretty brutal with us too, and thoroughly deserved too.
But, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, that's completely off topic.
As we normally are,
we just alienated sort of, you know, a rather large section of possible listeners.
When we're in New Zealand, it's like, you should listen to our podcast. So anyway, just not episode six.
The next time.
You did an episode about sex.
That's right. So the next time, or the only time that Soul Trader will play in New Zealand, I hope that there's not a lynch mob waiting for us as Air New Zealand flight number 666 lands at Auckland Airport or whatever.
No, I'm sure it'll be fine.
I'm sure it'll be fine too.
It'd be worse if we were paying out Australia. It'd be worse if we were paying out Australians.
Anyway, so
we were going to talk about we'd be in right trouble.
Yeah, that's right. So we were going to be talking about what, Simon? Enlighten us.
Balance. Balance in all things, which sounds very Lord of the Ringish. I'm not sure which.
I suppose it's a nice segue, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, exactly.
We eventually found our way back to balance, make me at one with everything.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it can probably apply to a lot of people rather than just musicians and creatives, but we're going to come at it from a creative perspective and a music industry perspective.
I suppose this spawned from sort of an idea that I put down as a possible topic, talking about the myth of the starving artist. I think that's how this sort of topic that we're going to be discussing came about. And I suppose what I meant by that was the stereotypical creative or artist that is portrayed in media is a person that doesn't take any responsibility for anything. Two, has, you know, management and everyone doing things for them. And three, all they need to take care of is the art, and life, it just, you know, gets done by other things, other people. And I suppose you see people sort of writing in these Facebook groups about where do I find a manager, for instance. And the main reason, from what I can see, that people want to find management is because they really can't be bothered doing the tasks themselves, and so they feel that they deserve to have someone take on the role as their manager to basically wipe their ass. So all they do is just sit there and write songs, you know, which is not the reality of what the industry is. And I suppose what we'd be talking about in regards to balance is the fact that to be seeing yourself as a full-time creative, as a professional musician, as a someone that sort of works within sort of the creative industries, you need to be able to be well versed in wearing many hats, and as well as wearing the hat of the creator, the hat of the business person, you need to also wear the hat of tracky dacks bumming around at home, taking time out from that, because it's really, really easy being a workaholic, you know, in the creative field if you're not taking care of if you're not taking care of your health, whether it be physical or mental, and just taking care of other business besides the business that you choose to be in and the activities that you need to do to make that business happen, you know, write songs, rehearse, find gigs, et cetera, et cetera, then you're not going to be of any use to yourself or anybody else. And I suppose it'd be really interesting to sort of for both of us to reflect on sort of how we do it and sort of, you know, sort of create an episode that sort of outlines that, so maybe, you know, other people can take elements of that and integrate it into their own practice.
I was going to say it kind of in some ways there's elements of that that encompasses kind of what the podcast, I guess, is about, you know, in terms of music creativity and other plans.
Yeah.
Not that it necessarily the other plans is more kind of referring to the kind of, you know, the ups and downs. It's probably referring to the ups and downs of the music and the creative process as opposed to the business stuff. But
then again, the other plans could, you know, be you plan to take the day off and
well, exactly. Yeah.
Go down to the beach.
I was going to say
take a mental health day or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I was going to say, you know, we can shed light on our process and how successful or otherwise we've been at that at various times. I mean, it's something that's a bit of a dynamic process, I guess. But just, I mean, touching on the thing you said, just because it's a specific point, is like somebody on a group, say, asking for a manager. It's an interesting thing is that if you look back, I actually ran into somebody who used to work as a manager for artists.
Mm-hmm.
And was absolutely appalled. I should talk to him actually and see if I can get him to come on the podcast at some stage, because he probably has some insight because he's from the States. And basically just said that he was appalled at current managers of artists, or people, yeah, who want to be managers.
Okay.
Because they view it like a job, not a career, in the sense that they come in and go, okay, yeah, I'll manage you. What I want is this much per week, you know, and a percentage of everything you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they expect to get paid from day one. And it's just like, fuck off. You know, the manager is like the fifth Beatle kind of thing.
Mm.
You know, you're in this for the ups and downs. You know, you get successful if we get successful.
Mm-hmm.
And the best example in Australia of an artist is Powderfinger. A guy that I think we've spoken about him on the podcast before, but, you know, a guy that was just a fan of the band and came up and said, you guys need a manager.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess it'd be kind of good. And he was just a fan. So he just wanted to do what was best for the band, didn't know anything about managing artists,
mm-hmm,
but just, you know, went, well, what do we need to do? And then kind of learnt on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
But he was risking everything. If the band is successful, more successful, then I get something. And so there's, you know, there's two problems. Obviously, you know, as an artist, you need to be just in everything, have a, you know, you need to have processes in place for kind of all aspects of your career. And then on top of that, you need to go, oh, I need some help at some level.
Sure.
And, you know, you need to work out, you know, what part of the process you want to hand over to somebody else. But the problem also with managers these days is they don't come in right at the start and say, I'll work for nothing, like you're working for nothing, but I'll get a cut of everything. And what do you need me to do? I'll book gigs. I'll, you know, arrange this, I'll arrange that, you know. So there's kind of problems on two sides kind of there. For anybody out there who's thinking about getting management, it's not an easy path, and as I said, most modern managers are shit because they're not they're not Glenn Wheatley. You know, they're not mortgaging their house to record your album. They're asking you to mortgage your house to pay them.
Mm.
And it's just like,
okay.
So there's a bit of a, you know, but I think that, basically, in the early days, nobody's going to help you. But I also think that you also do need to look at maybe not so much the management stuff, but I hear a lot of YouTubers talk about it.
Yeah.
Which is, you can't do everything yourself, which is a lot of people just want to do everything themselves. And there's no growth when you're trying to do everything yourself because you can't create more time. But if you can delegate some bits and pieces to other people at some point, then suddenly you free up a bunch of time. And it's the old adage that, you know, if you can spend your time doing the things you're good at that earn money, then do that rather than things that take up your time and don't earn you any money. So if there's an opportunity for me to do more of the making money stuff and I'm struggling between, I've got to do this other stuff as well, but I could be doing more gigs, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever your creative output is.
Sure.
You might say do like the podcast, for example, editing the podcast, editing the video, editing the music, the audio, all that kind of stuff. If you had somebody else who could just do all that and you take up, how much time does that take up as a total? And you go, oh, I can just get somebody else to do that.
Mm.
They do it in half the time, potentially. Certainly the video side of things, if they're a great video editor, it's bang, 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 done.
Sure.
They're less emotionally attached to it. And, you know, so it takes less time for them to do it and you can focus on the things you're good at. And I think that's one area that everybody gets it wrong. Everybody just wants to do everything themselves.
Mm.
They want to be the expert at absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And
very possible. But I suppose with the technological advances that have been happening in the past 5-10 years, the next tool that comes out will make this easier, will make that easier for musicians. It'd be really easy for artists that are just starting out to think that they could do it all themselves because this is how these tools are marketed in a way.
Oh, look, I think you can. I think you can do it all yourself to a point.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think you can do a bit of everything, and knowing how to do a bit of everything is important.
I think so.
So if you can do a bit of video editing, a bit of social media stuff, and you know how to use the social media apps to kind of, you know, add stuff to, you know, you looked into it a little bit and you kind of know how to, you know, overlay stuff and stories and just all that kind of stuff. I mean, a lot of people are going to go, oh, of course I know how to do that. But some people don't.
Mm.
Some people aren't savvy with social media. But if you know how to do a little bit of that and, you know, you can do music recording and things like that and you have a little bit of a sense of different aspects of the industry, you know, you understand a bit of the technical side of it, I guess, in terms of like playing live. You know, most people, you assume in this day and age, might know how to set up their own PA, you know, get that sounding good.
Yeah.
You know, doing all that stuff yourself in the beginning, you can do it all yourself. And having some knowledge of everything is good, in the sense that if you have no knowledge of it, then when you're going to get somebody else to do it, you kind of, if you have no sense of that task, it's harder to, you know, know what's involved.
It's hard to communicate what it is that you want if you're not talking in the language that the other person can understand. And also, you know, it might be easy for you to be taken for a ride a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
So if you lob up in a foreign city and you hop into a cab, and you have no idea where the destination is. I mean, they could take you all over the place. You wouldn't be, you'd be none the wiser, but you'd be much more out of pocket.
I was going to say that's the beauty of Google Maps these days.
That is true. But I mean, I think, you know, 5-10 years ago, there was a lot of talk about street teams, you know, when people still went out and put up posters and did all that sort of stuff and handed out flyers, and you had, you know, a bit of a mini tribe or a mini community of true believers that were around you that, you know, could be delegated tasks to get things done before and after gigs, for instance, you know.
I think there's room for that in a digital space.
Of course. Well, yeah, of course.
A digital street team or a social street team where you've got a few people
The rise of virtual assistants is quite prevalent from what I've read. And, you know, whether that could be done on a local or, you know, outsourced to someone overseas, you know, a virtual assistant could be from anywhere. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, someone that you could walk across the road and knock on their door and say, how's things going? I mean, you know, remote meetings happen all the time. So I suppose, you know, is the role of, you know, what is the role of a manager these days? You know, I mean, I've never thought to engage in a manager, so I wouldn't have a clue. You know, I don't necessarily have an interest in sort of trying to find a manager, because I wouldn't think that I am at a stage where even a manager worth their salt would take me on. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's just such a foreign concept for me. Would the role of a manager now be the same as it was with, you know, when Brian Epstein decided to take on, you know, four mop top boys from Liverpool? You know, it's like, you know, is it sort of relatively the same thing, or, you know, have the technological advances and just the advancement of and the progress of the music industry from that time, you know, has it, you know, moved the goalpost and changed the role a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see a lot of there's big artists who still have managers.
Oh, well, and then you have the kind of big artists. I mean, I would imagine that's an essential thing. But I'm talking about sort of people on sort of mid-level or grassroots level.
I think the people who are still kind of they're not as established. Often they'll have an agent in different territories.
Yeah.
So if you go onto their website, it'll say, you know, in Australia, this is the booking agent.
Yeah.
And in Canada, this is the booking agent. And, you know, it might be different booking agents in different parts of Australia. I think that's what Sean Kirk's, you know, who's been on the podcast, is his website's got, I think he's got a couple, I think he's maybe got WA and the rest of Australia. And then he does some stuff in Canada, or has in the past.
Right.
So, you know, he does everything himself. Actually, he's a good example in terms of what we're talking about, because he put out a social media post recently and literally saying, I've been trying to do everything myself, like forever.
Yeah.
I do everything, like absolutely everything you see, I've done myself. All the social media stuff, all the booking of all the tours. And, you know, and I would probably argue that Sean's creative output in terms of the amount of music he creates, like original songs that he's recorded and released, is not that great or vast. Mm. You know, it's probably a half a dozen songs, I think, something like that. It might be a dozen songs, but it's not vast.
Yeah.
And probably that's partly because he's doing everything himself. So he's always doing all these big tours. And I don't know how he organises those tours. Like, I'm pretty impressed by what he does touring-wise. But he basically put the call out on social media and says, if anybody's interested in helping me, you know, with some of this stuff, you know, get in touch. And I think he might have had, I can't remember, because obviously it wasn't something that I was necessarily thinking, oh, I could help him out. He might have had some kind of job descriptions in terms of the kind of things that he needed help with.
Sure.
I think that what you end up with potentially these days is a team of people, you know, doing different things. Like, you might have like somebody who's in charge of like a social media manager. Now, they might manage social media for half a dozen different people or different companies. Mm-hmm. And you might say, hey, can you help me out with mine a little bit? And So you might have, rather than having, you know, a manager as such, you might have that. But there is something to be said for managers, because when you're playing a gig, they're kind of potentially, you know, coordinating other things. They you know, they protect you from the shit that's going on. You know, when you're on the road and you're about to do a big gig and something, the shit hits the fan, the manager's there.
Yeah.
And the manager goes, okay, let's sort this out. We don't, the artist doesn't need to know this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Let's sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not get, and, you know, that's not the, the artist is, you know, poor little precious artist. It's just that their focus is on putting on a great performance.
Yeah.
We don't need them up there thinking about, you know, that this has happened. And yeah, I mean, so they, I think they do serve or can serve a purpose. It's just, it's it, one, it's a matter of whether they come on board as a, you know, I think with a manager as such, you, you have to have somebody who says, man, you guys are awesome. Girls are awesome, whatever. I want to put all my kind of cards on the table. I reckon I can get you, you know, to the next level. I've got some contacts. I reckon I can get you on some big tours, support act. I can get you in front of some people.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can earn some dollars here. I think we can take you to the next level. I think we can get you, you know, record deal or better distribution. You know, obviously a lot of people sign with small labels and then the, and a, then a big label takes on the, the distribution. Yeah, so I think that there is still a part, but you need to find somebody who is emotionally invested in what you're doing, who just goes, I'll do whatever it takes. I like, I really like what you guys are doing. And I know that they're few and far between, but, you know, Powderfinger, Glenn Wheatley, those kind of people where it's just like they'll lay their life on the line. They're as committed to your music as you are.
Yeah.
You know, they're rare and that's what makes it so difficult. And I don't have any time for anybody who isn't them. You know, if you're a manager and you're not that, I really don't care for you.
Mm-hmm.
You should be that committed to your artist. You know, if you don't believe in it that much, just get out of their way. You know, it's... If you're not on the bus fully, you know, if you're 1 foot out the door, just get off. You're just slowing us down. If you're, you know, you're causing problems. You're either all in or all out. And you either believe 100% in what's happening here or don't stand in my way. Because you have to have that kind of you know, that energy behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think there's, you know, too many people around like that. But I do think that we need to, you know, you need to consider, like Sean is, as you get to a certain point, when you're potentially getting overwhelmed by it, or it's retarding your growth.
Yeah,
that it's like, how can I do this? And you were talking about the outsourcing of stuff. It's like you could search for a social media manager and say to them, I just need you to post once a day for me. Like if they're a good social media manager, they're doing that in like 15, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So you're not paying them for an entire week.
Mm.
They're not a, like it's a subcontractor.
Yeah.
So you're basically saying to them, look, I'm not really good at social media. You tell me what you need from me. If you say to me, here's the kind of photographs I need, you know, like they might say, what do you do in your life? Oh, it's like I go mountain bike riding, I do a bit of walking, I'm around the house and obviously I play gigs in places and I do a bit of traveling to play some gigs. And it's like, and they just give you a list and say, okay, well, when you're out riding, take photographs. When you're out walking, take photographs, you know, of different things, you know, and send them to me, you know, and I'll help post them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, give me some thoughts, but I'll just time it. You know, we can coordinate that together. And they're there just to kind of help that process because some people are better at that than others.
Yeah.
I mean, I loathe social media. I mean, not on there very much at all at the moment. And I really, the more I'm not on there, the the less I care. Mm. But I understand that it's a tool. You know, so that's an example of where it might be worthwhile having somebody who's really good at it, really enthusiastic about it. They like doing it. And you know, you pay them something to do it.
Yeah.
And it's just like they might only take a couple of hours a week. And it's just like, cool, well, how much is that per hour if I just get you to do a couple of things for me? It's like not a major thing, I'll just so yeah, I think you can get people like that just to take some of the workload. If you can then focus on, you know, it's like having agents, like Sean working with agents. So so he says he does. I mean, I'm sure I saw a thing once where he said, I book all the tours, but recently he's got some agents who he works with. So I'm assuming they book some of the venues for him and he has to coordinate with them. But you can't, you know, any business, if you're manufacturing something and you're doing it all yourself, say you're, I don't know, screen printing a T-shirt. I'm wearing like a Lonely City T-shirt, which is by a guy in Adelaide who screen prints T-shirts in his garage. You know, he can grow to a certain point.
Mm. Yeah, that's right.
But there becomes a point where it's just like, you know, if he takes off, you know, he's like, well, as soon as I print stuff, it's all sold out. So we need to print more stuff. He goes, I don't have the time.
Mm.
So we'll get somebody else to print this stuff.
There was a great example years ago about Kangaroo Island honey, and you know, it became the latest, you know, greatest thing, because I think Kangaroo Island, for people who don't know, is an island just off of Adelaide, basically off the coast of South Australia, and they have one of the purest line of Ligurian bees in the world or something like that, apparently. And sort of the honey that comes from them is quite prized. And there was a company that sort of found themselves, you know, overrun with orders, and, you know, it was just a very small operation, and they didn't sort of plan for the scale of business that that they were going to be experiencing, and sort of went out of business. And I suppose there's a lot of instances about you know, businesses that start off, you know, every business starts off small, but you've got to plan for, you know, to some extent you've got to plan to scale. But I suppose, you know, as a musician, you know, just speaking from, you know, our experiences as a musician, you know, we are caught in the we are caught in that sort of divide between being a creative individual and also having to wear the hat of a business person as well. Mm. And you know, some people can glide between those two divides. They can wear those two hats quite well. And there are some people that are probably too businesslike in their creativity, or too creative in their business. Or is that such a thing? You know, sort of too, you know, they're not business enough.
I think you can be.
Well, you can be too creative in your business, and that works out good. I'm talking about sort of, you know, the not businesslike enough in terms of how they. How they put themselves forward as a musician, as a creative person,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, I think we spoke a little bit last week about being professional,
yeah,
in terms of gigs and stuff like that. And look, there's definitely people who struggle in that department. They're all like, they're like too cool. They're like hippie man, and it's just like, and it's like, you just have no understanding of what other people are like. You need to understand what other people are like. You need to be, you know. It's not really empathetic. It's just you need to understand what other people are thinking, and other people think you're a dickhead.
Mm.
And it's just like you need to see how you need to, you know, step out of your body and see how you're kind of coming across.
Yeah.
And it's funny actually, because in the early days of me playing original stuff at venues, where I was playing on the bill with multiple other artists, you know, I'd kind of chat to people and,
you know, I'd be like, this is, you know, this is what I want to do, and this is what I'm planning to do, and this is, these are the ideas I want to, you know, this is what I want to do with my career, and blah blah blah. And then you see somebody, have somebody else on the bill who was all over the place, like super vague, unprofessional, had no idea what they were doing. And you'd have this person walk up to them and go, do you need a manager? And I'd kind of look like, I just spoke to that person. And, you know, it happened a couple of times where something like that happened. And I asked one of those people, I said, why didn't you ask to be my manager? And they were like, well, you don't seem like you need a manager. You seem like you've got it all together. You know where you're going. And one, I think that's, you know,
bit of a backhanded compliment, really.
Yeah, I also think it's a big mistake. Yeah. It's just like, don't take on the person who's a complete mess.
Yeah.
Because they ain't going anywhere. Take on the person who has a fairly good picture of what they want, because all you have to do is execute that picture.
Mm.
That's your job.
Mm.
You know, your job as a manager is going, okay, what are you guys? You know, tell me what we're trying to do here. You know, I really love your music. I like the vibe you got going on. Where do you want me to take you? That's what a manager should be saying.
Mm.
Not, I know what you, well, I mean, there is an argument to that. There's Guns N' Roses. Now, here's something that I, you know, this could be an old wives' tale, but I'm going to say it here on the podcast and somebody can correct me. But, you know, there's the album with Patience on it, which is like acoustic, and it's got Crazy on there as well, I think.
Right.
I think the song's called Crazy. Anyway. There's another song on that album that's kind of an acoustic version of something that was on Appetite for Destruction. And so the story goes that I kind of read in a magazine years ago, when magazines were a thing, how long it was, that the thing was they actually sounded more like that, more like Patience, more like the acoustic stuff. And their manager said, you know what you should do? You should put a hat on Slash, that'd be good. Some leather pants and player. Les Paul, you know, play really loud electric stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Get away from this kind of acoustic vibe. You know, so a manager can potentially, you know, push a band in a good direction.
Yeah.
And I think as an artist also you should be, you know, somewhat, you know, your this is what we're trying to do. Look, we want to get our music out in front of people. You know, is that what you want to do? Like, do you want to do you want to starve for the rest of your life, or do you want to play concerts around the world? What do you care for? Like, what's, you know, where do you stand? And if you just say, look, I want to play in front of as many people as possible and just touch as many people with my music as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody says, well, you know what you should do is you should make your music a little bit more this or a little bit more that, you know. We've discussed in the past about country, how that, you know, a lot of people put a little bit of country in their music and then suddenly they get famous and then they're no longer country anymore. You know, like if there's a gap in the marketplace and, you know, a record label or a manager sees that and says, look, we can position you here. You know, that way you're gonna be unique in your field. You're gonna be outstanding in your field. Then that'll work. Then maybe that's something you can do as well. But I think the other thing that comes with all this, you were talking about at the start, is and we spoke about it, is kind of you've got all that stuff. It's taking up all your time. You might have to get other people to help you. But if you don't have the balance, you have nothing.
Mm.
Like honestly.
Well, two words come to mind, doesn't it? Burnout.
Yeah, and
then, I mean, personally, that's something that you know, it's almost on a bloody annual basis for me because I don't take the time out to recharge, and for me it's all about the work, and the whole reason of being a, you know, in inverted commas, full-time creative is so, you know, you don't need to take the time out. You don't need to take the time off because what you're doing isn't really work because you enjoy it anyway. But, I mean, there is some sort of element of, you know, it's taxing on the body. It's taxing on the mind. And sometimes you just need to, and I'm realizing this more and more, you know, that sometimes the best thing to do is to do nothing rather than to do something.
Yeah.
And sort of, you know, the older I get, the more I see that as being pretty important because, you know, burning the candle at both ends has a detriment effect now rather than what it was, say, 20 years ago. You know, you almost wore that as a badge of courage, you know, a badge of honour, you know, how much, you know, how many gigs you play and how much work you do. You know, you're constantly sort of at it all the time. You know, I suppose it's the musicians or the creatives' version of the hustle culture, you know. And now, you know, I just look at that hustle culture stuff is absolute bullshit. And it's just like, my God, you know, it's like work over the over and above everything else at the cost of your health and sanity. That's ridiculous, you know. And yet I personally find myself, you know, sort of to some extent sort of burning out.
It's like you go, hustle culture is bullshit. I just work 12 hours a day every day. It's like, you do realize that's the same thing.
The same thing, yeah. Like, yeah, I realize that
you
could be
seen as... You just didn't call it hustle.
Yeah, that's right. I realize it could be seen as hypocritical, but no, I'm really starting to see the value of, you know, taking the time out and just, you know, at the very least recharging the batteries and at the very most, you know, sort of learning to love the work again, because there is a time, there can be a time if you do too much of something that you love, then it all of a sudden becomes a job, and then all of a sudden you find yourself not liking it and yeah. And forgetting the whole reason why you started, you know, going down the path as a musician in the first place. Yeah, because you just get all consumed by the bizzo, you know, by the business itself.
Like there is... I mean, it's like people talk about balance, right? Yeah. And it's like it's probably overused.
It's a bit of a buzzword.
Yeah, it's a bit of an overused term.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's like moderation, right? Everything is good in moderation. Water is good in moderation. If you get waterboarded, it ain't good. If you drown in the ocean, it ain't good. If there's lots of it getting poured on you all the time, it's not good. If you drink too much of it, it's not actually good for you.
Mm.
You shouldn't actually drink just a shit ton of water. It's not good for you.
Mm.
Right?
Leaches all the sodium in your body and stuff.
So,
yeah.
Like some foods are good, but like Steve Jobs ate carrots and only carrots and started turning orange. Which
yes,
right. So
yes,
anything can be is things that are good. They're only good in moderation. Like sex is good, but like anything, riding a bike's good.
Ooh.
Any of those things.
That's a long bow to draw, though.
No, any of those things, if you're doing them 24 hours a day, at some point you're going to go, I need a break from this. I'm out of energy.
My dick is going to fall off.
See, I didn't go that far.
They were waiting for it. They were waiting for the gutter.
They were waiting for you to go there. But, like, going out in the sun is good. Vitamin D. Too much sun, you get sunburnt, right? It doesn't matter what it is. Every single thing in life is about balance. Food, not enough, you starve, right?
Well, it's what Buddhists call the middle way, isn't it?
I don't know. Do Buddhists call it that?
The middle way. It's like you find that sort of center and you walk it,
right?
You know? And well, that's what moderation is. You know, it's finding the center of the two extremes.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, if you take that approach with everything, well, you know, you're walking in the path of moderation. And I think as a you know, working in a creative industry, where it's not looked at as, you know. Well, there's a lot of people that don't make enough money, you know. There's lots and lots and lots of money pressures. I mean, say, for instance, if you're a lawyer, you know, you could be a workaholic as a lawyer, you know, but you're on salary, you get commissions for winning jobs and all that sort of stuff. I mean, you know, your income dramatically increases with the amount of work that you do, and then there's prestige and all that sort of stuff, I would imagine. I've never been a lawyer, but I mean, that's what it seems to be, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, as a musician, for instance, you know, there's no guarantee of that. So you're constantly chasing the dragon's tail. You're constantly chasing where the money is and trying to find the balance between, you know, art for art's sake and just doing what's required to make an income, which, you know, we're doing with the hybrid, you know, sort of, you know, our solo things, you know, with doing our own stuff as well as, you know, doing other people's songs sort of in our rep when we're playing as a solo entity. You know, that's trying to walk that line of moderation, because it's quite easy to either go one way and just play all your own stuff. That's fine and that's great, but you're not going to get the same amount of income as if you just go to venues and you're playing covers, because at the moment that's what people want to hear. But, you know, straddling that line between the two and playing the both, you know, you've got the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So, but it's also, you know, the path of moderation is not necessarily the path of less resistance either. It's something that you've got to constantly monitor. You've got to constantly be sort of mindful and examine what it is that you're doing all the time. And I suppose, you know, that's another thing that I'm sort of, you know, on a personal level, sort of learning really, you know, learning really fast, I suppose, is, you know, taking that quote from Socrates, you know, an examined, you know, life is a life worth living, and putting that into a real life situation.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the other thing with the young people who are out there in this hustle culture, the younger generation now wants everything. I want it right now. I have to have it right now. I can't wait. It has to be right now. You know, they talk about young people going out and actually getting jobs and then just quitting because they're like, this is not the perfect job. It's just like, that's because you have no experience. You know, it's just like, I want to get paid as much as that guy. He's been here 10 years. He knows what he's doing. You don't. You know, like they're not giving that time to kind of, and with the hustle, you go work. It's just kind of like, I want everything now. And it's just like, sometimes things take time. But I think also you can, you know, there's a lot of people who hustle, and then have either burnout, breakdowns, drug addiction, you know, even just coffee addiction, you know. Yeah, but you're not as bad as some people. Like some of these people are like 5 or 6 cups a day and they're just like, you know, so jacked up on coffee.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm trying to think what book it was in that I was reading, or maybe it was a podcast where they're talking about the length. So caffeine, something like stays in your system for like 15 hours.
Oh, okay.
So if you have a coffee first thing in the morning, it's still in your system when you're trying to go to sleep at night.
Cool.
It's that bad a drug. You know, I don't drink coffee, and at the moment I don't drink very much soft drink at all.
Right.
Little bit at gigs occasionally when I'm doing gigs around the place. But you know, it's running all these people, but they're all jacked up and they're all like go. And the internet and social media doesn't help with this, because it kind of breeds this, you know, culture in general, just talking on a wider sense.
Yeah.
You know, that they're missing out. That look at this person, they've got all this fancy stuff. And it's just like, I guarantee you one thing. Like, look, all you have to do is look at famous people. You know, it doesn't matter what career. They still off themselves. They still OD on drugs.
Yeah.
They're not happy. Like, all that shit doesn't make them happy. All the money doesn't make them happy. If you, it's like you, the man who gets everything he ever wanted in life isn't necessarily suddenly happy. And so it's really important to, you know, not just be balanced in the time you spend doing stuff,
mm-hmm.
but in the person that you are.
Yes.
Like I look at my kids. Like I've got kids who are adults and moved out of home and all that. And I look at them as very balanced people. You know, they're not obsessed with one thing. They're not like, you know, and I'm cool with that, you know, like, because you can have kids who are just like obsessed to the nth degree and they just put everything else aside and they're just on something. They're like, this is it and I just don't want anything to do with anything else, like a sports person. And they might go on and become a famous sports person, but they might also have nothing else in their life.
Yeah.
So I'm more than happy that my kids are very well balanced. They just, they have a, you know, a balanced life of work and friends and social life and, you know, and they're doing things that they're passionate about.
Yeah.
And so you can find that with music as well, that you get totally, you were talking about it, it's just the productivity of the work. And it's not necessarily nourishing the rest of, you know, the soul, you yeah. know, in a yeah. sense. And when you start to slow down, one, you can become more productive. So obviously I've mentioned it a couple of times, probably this series, because I've been just finished reading that Stolen Focus book. But, you know, they talk about the four-day working week, which I'm a big, you know, I'm right behind that. I'm also right behind universal basic income.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people where you work 4 days instead of five and you achieve just as much in four than you did in five.
Yeah.
Because you actually wasted time. And there's no question that every creative person out there who's like hustling is either, you know, making the most of this time and completely burning out,
mm-hmm.
or wasting a lot of their time
because
they are getting distracted by other things, and they would be more efficient if they just pared back a little bit, took a day off here or there, or a couple of days off, took a weekend off, you know, signed it, put a line under it and said, I'm not doing anything on the weekend. Weekend is weekend time, whatever it might be. I mean, obviously for musicians it's a little bit different because we play gigs on weekends and normally our weekends are taken up.
Mm-hmm.
So then make Monday your weekend, make Wednesday your weekend, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But, yeah, taking that break and letting your mind just not sitting on your phone all day.
Mm.
That's,
exactly.
You know,
because
that's not a break.
No, you're still, I mean, you're passively engaging, but, you know, you're still engaging nonetheless.
Yeah. I mean, you could, but I also think that's like you could sit down and play a computer game. You could sit down and watch a movie that you really enjoy. That's different from social media.
Yeah.
Because social media is this, you're being inundated with too much information.
Mm.
So, you know, you can still potentially do stuff in front of a screen. You know, playing computer games might be your thing. Watching movies might be your thing.
Yeah.
But, taking those breaks, getting away from things, you know, kind of is imperative and will ultimately make you, in my opinion, more effective. And you'll just be happier in the long run.
Yeah.
I think that one other quick thing is that you might do a tour. You might be on the road, you know, and when you're on that tour, you're playing a gig maybe every day, you know, maybe every day and a half, so to speak. So you might have some days off and might be back to back on a few days. You know, you might have other interviews to do and, you know, you might have arranged to go on some podcasts or radio or da 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 da. And for a set period of time, you're really in it.
Mm.
And that's cool. You can do that. That's not hustle culture, so to speak, because as a musician, that's the kind of thing you do. But then when you get back from that, it's just like, well, I'm going to take a week off. I'm not going to do anything this week, you know, except maybe do a podcast or something like that. But you're just going to
don't feel guilty about it.
No,
because that's what a lot of creatives feel when they do have a period of time where they can take off.
Mm.
Even just sitting down, and I think we've mentioned this before in previous podcasts, you know, previous episodes, you know, sitting down to read a book, and you feel guilty about reading the book, you know, because, oh, I should be checking my emails or I should be doing something else.
I used to feel guilty playing the guitar because I was thinking I should be doing something more productive, more money-making. This is not making me money. Weird.
It is weird. The chasing the dollar, you know. I mean, as soon as you start falling into that trap of just everything you do is just chasing the dollar, it's like all amount of creative juices just get sucked out of you, and that's it.
Or even worrying about.
Yeah.
You know, just do the things that move you forward.
Yeah.
If you can extract the amount of time you spend worrying, and that's not to say, like, I'm not perfect and I don't ever worry. Bullshit, right? Everybody worries. But when you find yourself worrying more than you need to, that's when you need to step back, take a break, go and get some fresh air.
Yeah.
Take a walk, go for a run, go for a ride, do something vigorous maybe. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, I go and shoot basketball hoops sometimes because that just kind of like just gets me in a bit of a zone. Whatever it might be, and then come back and go, okay.
Chuck the ball around with your dog, mate.
Charlie, the studio dog, is asleep on the couch.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, find something that just distracts you for a minute and then come back to it. And in basically what you're doing is coming back to you. If you're worrying about money, then it's like, okay, what do I need to do? What do I need to move forward? For me at the moment, okay, I need to get a few more pub gigs over the next few months. I need to lock a few more in. So how do I do that?
Yeah.
I contact a few more venues that I haven't contacted in a little while, see where they're at, see if they want to have me back, see if they're up to their next booking round. And what happens? Over the next week, I'll normally get a few gigs booked.
Yeah.
And it's like, if over the next week, I only normally play 2 or 3 gigs a week, right? If over the next week I get a gig or two booked, then that's as many as I was going to get booked.
Yeah.
In a sense, because 1 week, a couple more gigs, 2 or 3 more gigs. Well, yeah. And if the next week I get it, 2 or 3 more gigs. And so that's all I need to do. And sometimes all that takes is a couple of hours of focus,
yeah,
of making a few phone calls.
And a deep breath and the clear head, basically.
Yeah. And then you can step back and go, okay, well, I've secured my future, so to speak. I've secured the next little bit of time. So now, okay, I can get on with other things that are the bigger picture things. What do I want to kind of do as a creative?
Yeah.
But yeah, you can spend so much time wasting so much time. And we spoke about this before. I mean, because it's the self talk in your own head,
mm-hmm,
and it's the would we be friends if you spoke to me the way I speak to myself inside my own head?
Yeah.
And usually the answer is no.
Yeah.
Right. You wouldn't be friends with people who spoke to you the way you speak to yourself. So don't speak to yourself like that. There's just no point. It serves absolutely no purpose. That's easier said than done.
Yeah.
If you're suffering, you know, depression, certainly you need to seek medical attention. You know, you need to get some therapy. You need to get somebody to talk to. Anxiety, it depends on where it's at.
Yeah.
But that's what it, you know, it is anxiety that comes with that. Obviously, if it's extreme anxiety, you need to do something about that. But, yeah, I mean, you just need to sometimes get out of your own way, and sometimes that's stepping back. Look at your own situation as if you're looking at somebody else's situation. Like if I'm looking at you and going, you know, if you're me and I'm seeing you do what I'm doing to myself, what am I going to tell you?
Mm.
And talk to yourself like that.
Yeah.
Talk to yourself the way you'd talk to a friend who is in strife. You know, look in the mirror and go, don't look in the mirror and go, you're a fucking idiot. Because you wouldn't say to your friend, you're a fucking idiot. You know? We might, depends. They might not be your friend for very long. But, you know, you'd kind of say, well, okay, what are you trying to do? Where do you want to get to? What's troubling you? What are the issues? And I think as a creative person, you need to do that.
Mm.
And you need to spend more time, you know, stepping back and, you know, making sure you're taking care of the full picture, rather than just the musical picture.
Yeah.
So
I suppose, you know, find the time to take care of the music, take care of the business, and take care of yourself. Because it all, you know, you take care of yourself, then you take care of the music, it takes care of the business. Take care of the business, takes care of the music, you take care of yourself. It's a nice little circle.
Yeah, and if you need help in any of those areas,
Don't be afraid to ask.
If you need help with taking care of yourself, then that's, you know, maybe that's just socializing a little bit more. Maybe it's seeking some, you know, a psychologist to chat to, somebody that you can, you know, there's outside your friends and you can just chuck some ideas at them.
Yeah.
This is what I'm thinking. Am I crazy? Am I not actually crazy, but, you know, like, is that the right way to be thinking? Or, like, why do I think like this? And they'll be able to, you know, throw some ideas back at you. You know, in the business sense, potentially, you know, depending on where you're at, you know, you might need some help or even just some advice from some of the, you know, there are services around that might be able to provide some help. Just talk to another musician, you know, network with other people. Hey, how do you do this? I'm getting stuck on this. But stop thinking you can do it all yourself, because you can't. You know, there is not one really successful musician, not one, that has done it all by themselves. I guarantee you.
Yeah, there's too many things.
There's not one person who stood up at the Grammy Awards last night, not that I was watching, and said, thank you to me, the rest of you didn't do anything. You know, they're listing off people for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You can't do it by yourself, no matter what it is. So, you know, reach out to people you know, people who've been there before. Hey, what do you think about these ideas? It can't hurt.
And also too, I mean, if you're listening and you're, you know, a musician or a creative that, you know, has a question about, you know, anything about your work and your process and your sort of activity that you do within your day to day, and you want to sort of, you know, find another person's opinion on it, well, then by all means, let us know, because we love to put forward our two cents in as much as we possibly can.
We are more than happy to interview with your career. but yeah, no, I mean, to be honest, like, look, I've got some people who, you know, I you know, some other artists that I kind of chat to, and, you know, I'm planning to chat to shortly. Just, you know, and it doesn't matter whether they're kind of doing things that are higher than you, less than you, wherever they're at, as long as they've kind of got an idea of what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
You can probably give them, you know, some tips. There's nobody's path is the same. So we're all different. They might be more successful in this area, but you might have some tips of things that you've experienced along your journey that might help them progress with theirs. And it's like, it's not a competition.
No.
You know, I mean, yeah, you want to be the most successful artist you can, but it's just like, everybody can listen to lots of different artists, so it's not like it's not sport. It's not like if you win, I lose.
Yeah.
Music's not like that. So, you know, hang out with people who are on a similar mindset, similar, you know, they're trying to do the kind of things you're trying to do. You know, find good people within the industry. They're out there.
Awesome.
And as Corey said, if you want to touch base with us, happy to
you know, sort of impart whatever knowledge and experience we have. Yeah. But the most important thing is just, you know, breathe. And that's the big lesson I'm learning, is just, you know, take a step back, breathe, and it's not that important.
Yeah.
You know, so if you have this huge issue or problem, you know, most of the time, you know, if you have a clear head, bit of focus, take a deep breath, you can deconstruct it. And, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, we could probably talk about this all day, and we might come back to this at some other point. Yeah. or kind of similar takes on a topic.
We are overstaying our welcome. So.
Oh, we always overstay our welcome. But,
you know. First to arrive and last to leave. That's us.
Well, thanks for listening to the Soul Trader podcast for another week.
Episode number 6.
Yes. And we'll catch you next week.
Absolutely. Ciao for now.
See ya.
You have been listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart. Be sure to check out soultradermusic.com and CoreyStewartOnline.com. See you next week.